Welcome back to episode 218 of the Tall Boy Radio Podcast. And as we always say, who knows where it goes when the beer flows? Well, tonight it's flowing all the way to Texas. Do you want to say hello, Gaz?
Yeah, evening all, evening the world. Without giving too much away, I love the podcast when this particular person is on. It's always a bit of a hoot. Loved meeting him when he came over. So yeah, look forward to where this is going.
Indeed, indeed. And before we start, we have to say, for those watching on the live stream, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. We're enjoying a pint of Guinness, a pint of the black stuff here. Good man, good man. And yeah, is it Slante? Is that what they say? Is that what it's called?
Something like that. Top of the morning to you anyway.
Yeah, that'll do. How are you doing now, you cheeky rascals? Bo, how are you doing, dude?
Yeah, hold on a second. Oh, there you are. So what happens when you turn 50?
You don't have to tell us, dude.
Doing great. Looking forward to my birthday coming up. Didn't really think I'd be celebrating, you know, birthdays anymore, but 50 is pretty big, I guess. At this point in life, I guess we're just looking at decades at a time. So
yeah.
So doing great. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. So 50. So when this episode drops, I think it drops round about, well, a little while after your birthday, which we also have to say, while we're wishing you a happy 50th, I will also say a happy 14th to my nephew Ben, who's turned 14 on the same day as you.
That's right.
As we all know, my 50th, I celebrated out there in Texas with you guys. But first of all, dude, what have you got planned?
Well, so my birthday is actually during the week, so we're going to do this next weekend coming up. We're going to have some friends over. It's going to look a lot like what your birthday looked like. Yes. We're going to have some friends over. We're going to cook a little bit. We're going to have the pool ready. You know, it's going to be, that's what we do around here. I mean, we host parties at the house, you know, quite a bit, and people come over and, you know, we just have a good time. So it's going to be the same thing on a smaller scale.
Oh, dude, yeah, and I've got to tell you guys as well, you know, I'm not just saying it because he's here, because he does throw a good party. And not only that, dude, that was certainly without a shadow of a doubt, and I apologize to anybody who's ever thrown me a birthday party in the past. The best birthday I've had ever, bar none.
Yeah, it was, I was only mildly jealous, you know. I say the Texan sunshine, although there was the odd rain shower here or there. There's a couple of photos of me being absolutely wet.
Yeah, it really was. It was a good time. I'm glad Texas, you know, showed everything to Adam and the family when they were here, meaning the heat and everything, because it did not cool down. The water inside the pool was over 90 degrees. It was like being in a hot tub, but that's Texas. That's what we were doing.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah, and I'm just looking for the next excuse to go back there. Just dropping a few scores.
Yeah, so you don't really need an excuse, do you? Just off you go.
I can't wait. I can't wait. It's a phenomenal place. And they always say everything is bigger in Texas, and everything is bigger in Texas with no two ways about it. So tonight, we wanted to do an episode where we thought we'd not only celebrate your birthday, you're turning 50. We'll celebrate the last 50 years, dude. So we'd like to, you know, hear a few stories, tell us a few tales, find out a little bit more about yourself. Because the other interesting, and we will also say hello to Ron, who is watching on YouTube. So, yeah. But the thing is, so as similar as we are in many ways when we met up, I think we've got a, you know, very similar approach to life and what have you. We thought also take a look at the little bits of differences between growing up in the UK and growing up in the US. So we'd be curious, wouldn't we, Gazza, to hear a few stories from your childhood and a few other things. Now, one of the things I mentioned to you as well is, so Stuart asked a question of Vic Ferrari when he was on about being a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And you have done that, haven't you, dude?
I did, yeah. I did that. We really didn't use the word bounty hunter. We used fugitive recovery agent. And we did that because, you know, bounty hunter, it just kind of had this type of mystique that we were just trying to get out of. Because, you know, bounty hunters really didn't follow rules and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. So we wanted to be the professional type. So we were fugitive recovery agents. So, yeah, we did that. I did that for about a year and a half right after the military. when a friend of mine was like, hey, I'm doing this. And I said, I have no idea what that's about. He goes, well, I'll tell you, I made $10,000 last week. And I said, sign me up.
I mean, it works for me.
That'd work, yeah. That'd work. So, have you got any interesting stories from you? Well, any stories you can share with us from that time?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this, about my time as a future recovery agent, and, you know, the places I went to. We went up and down the East Coast is a lot where he and I were working. So the way we got our first jobs is we just made business cards and we started mailing them to people along the East Coast, basically. I was up in Michigan with him, and we just started mailing our cards to bail bondsmen, not really understanding, you know, exactly what everybody needed. But this guy calls us and he says, hey, I got your card in the mail. He goes, where are you guys out of? And I said, we're out of, you know, Michigan. And he says, well, can you come? I got seven people on the loose right now, and I don't have time to find them. It's going to cost me a lot of money if they don't go back. Yeah. I said, yeah, we'll come get them. So we went down there. We met him at his shop. He handed us all seven cases and said, I will pay you 20% per, you know, whatever, if they got out on $20,000 bond. We'll give you $4,000 for that one. Well, within 24 hours, we had all seven of them in jail. Nice. We didn't stop until, well, the last one actually turned himself in, but we still got paid. But yeah, we spent 24 hours, got all seven of them. And that just opened the door to a whole lot of work that we had out there on the East Coast, because he started calling everybody. And I don't think we were that good. I think we were just that lucky and persistent. And all I cared about was getting a paycheck.
Yeah. It's not a bad start though, is it? You know, your first job, it's like, here, go and catch these guys, and like a day later it's like, yep, tick, that's done.
Yeah. They're all done, right? Yeah. So
how similar was it to Dog the Bounty Hunter then?
So, funny story, I actually met him out in California.
Oh really?
We were looking for the same guy. So we had went out to California to look for somebody, and this is before his TV show. I didn't know anything about him, but he was he had cameras following him even then. And I guess he saw us kind of casing the place that he was looking at. And he walks over to us and he says, are you looking for this guy? And I said, well, yeah, you know, And he goes, well, we are too. And I was like, well, I didn't drive all the way across country to not get him. He goes, if I cut you guys a check, will you guys just leave? And I said, well, how much are you cutting us a check for? He goes, I'll give you $3,500. And I said, no problem. So we took his we took his money and left town and went home back. And that way he can get the catch. And the catch was only like $5,500. But I think it was more about him putting stuff on tape or whatever he was doing at the time. But I know the guy that I worked with, he got a check from him and we left town. It was just easier to do that because we didn't want to stay. We didn't have to stay there any longer.
Yeah, sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's
cool, that is because it's, you know, you go back to what you said about that there was a certain sort of, I say mystique, but there would be a certain sort of view that bounty hunters are a particular type of person and this, that, and the other. And I suppose it must be quite difficult to sort of fight against that as such, in as much as, you know, doing the right things and abiding by the law. And because, you know, there would be a massive misconception that actually, as you say, they're almost lawless and they go out and do what they want, and ultimately, as long as they get the guy, that's absolutely fine, what you do in the meantime, sort of thing. So right. To fight against that must have been quite difficult.
Well, there was a lot of people doing it for beer money. They weren't doing it as a living or trying to support their family like we were. Yeah. They were doing it, you know, to make a few hundred dollars or a couple thousand dollars. And for us, that was our job. That was what we did. And, you know, every time we went into a town, we'd always go to the police department first. We'd show them our warrants. We'd give them all of our information. And believe it or not, a lot of times, this happened in North Carolina. I remember going in there at midnight and showing this police department all of our paperwork. And the guy comes back out and he goes, well, how do you know this guy is there? I said, well, we did a lot of, you know, tracing. I said, we think he's there. He goes, well, do you have to arrest them or can he just be arrested? And I said, he just needs to be in jail.
Yeah.
He goes, well, we want to go with you. He got in a fight with one of our officers a couple of weeks ago. They sent everybody to his house.
Really?
And all we did was stand out back. And once they put him in handcuffs, I said, oh, and by the way, once you get out of jail here, you're going to be going back down to Florida where, you know. So I still got paid for it and didn't have to do anything but watch them arrest this guy.
You see, that would be my... That would be my take on quite easy money, I suppose. Yeah. Just like, let somebody else do it and still cash the check. That's right.
I mean, I don't know. It does sound pretty cool. Don't get me wrong. We've had cops on we talked to in the past, and they've sort of said like, you know, oh, a stakeout, that sounds like cool. It's like, actually, no, it can be incredibly dull. Well, yeah, that does sound pretty cool. That does sound pretty cool.
Well, I mean, and just to really put the cherry on top of it, those are the fun times, right? The other times were, you know, I had to go to McDonald's and eat all my meals there because I had no money because we were waiting on the next check to come, you know, or, you know, chasing down a person and it's just costing you a lot of money. And we would never get hotel rooms unless we got our first person. So I slept many nights in my car. You know, so it was just, there's a lot of work into that. And it's, I can't say that it's something that I would ever do again at all, no matter about the money, because I don't chase money anymore. But it was adventurous and I did have a good time doing it. I just, it's not something you can do forever.
No. And I suppose, if you're away from home and, you know, I suppose if you've got a family and you're away from home and actually you never really know how long you're going to be away from home, I suppose, because you never really know how long the chase is going to last. You're on his tail, you're hoping that it's within 24 hours, but it could be much longer than that. And it's like, sorry, honey, not coming home tonight. And I probably won't be home for the rest of the week or whatever, you know, and that must be really difficult, just bouncing around, like almost like relentlessly, like week after week after week doing that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, at the time I was divorced, so I didn't really have anybody around.
Right.
But my partner did, and we would stay gone 3 weeks at a time and then come back for maybe a week. But that whole week, I'm pushing them to go. Let's go. Because, you know, you're really just chasing that dollar at that point.
Yeah.
Man, that is interesting. Have you had any other interesting careers as well then that we may or may not know about?
So I was, you know, I was in the military. I started off at a high school in the Marine Corps. I did 4 years in the Marine Corps. I was actually on the M1A1 tank. I was a tank commander when I got out of the Marine Corps. I was out of the military for about 8 months, and then I went in the Army, and I did the same thing. I was on tanks again, and right after 9/11 happened, I thought I was going to get a really, really good job. So I was kind of holding out for that. That didn't go through, but I did 9 years total in the military on tanks. And then I kind of bounced around a lot trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Yeah. But the main thing was I wanted to get back to the camaraderie that I had in the military.
Yeah.
So I got on with the federal government as a guard at one of the Navy bases down here, down in Mississippi, actually. And that's where my federal service actually started. It was just a really good to be around those folks.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of have the same kind of language and, you know, kind of be around it. So I knew once I got back in the federal government that I was going to stay in.
Fair play. Yeah. I think when you speak to a lot of people and they speak about their time in the military, like Andy, who unfortunately can't be on the podcast tonight, I think that's what he remembers most is that camaraderie, that, you know, that just that sense of just a bunch of guys being together and everybody's got each other's backs, you know, and obviously then there's some, not quite in Andy's case, quite a few drinking stories to tell.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, if you're in the United States Marine Corps, you were 100% you're supposed to drink. I mean, it's part of your life, you know, I mean. We were born in a tavern in Pennsylvania. The Marine Corps started at Tun's Tavern, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So, you know, if you start in a bar, they expect you to drink the rest of your military career. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm sort of curious because, you know, you watch sort of American sort of TV shows and films and you always get the impression that the military guys that they literally stick together like band of brothers and they're tight and then wherever you're stationed there's always that military versus the local bar type hoodlums. And, you know, you must have been in various bars where it's sort of kicked off and all of a sudden it's like, right, man, we're in.
Yeah, so anybody will tell you, and it doesn't matter. You can Google it. You can ask anybody that's been in the military. The hardest people to fight were Marines because you have to fight every one of them.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as one of them going, yeah, I don't feel like doing this. You know? So you knew you were going to get into it with all of them. So, but some of the best friends I ever made in my life were in the Army too. I mean, I got, you know, one of my best friends is still here in town. And, you know, it's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, both services, all services have the same type of, you know, willingness. And, you know, is Ron still on? I can't tell if he's still on or not.
I don't know. Ron
was actually on, and he retired Air Force. I had the same, you know, feelings towards him, you know, camaraderie wise than I would with any Marine that I've, you know, been around.
Yeah.
I was telling guys actually when we were in Texas, so there's me, yourself, and Ron, we all went for breakfast. Mm-hmm. One morning, and it was one hell of a breakfast.
Yeah,
I've never seen a breakfast come on two plates before.
Well, that's how we get so big here. I mean,
yeah, myself, but you worry about that, dude. Yeah, but it was amazing just listening to you guys talk. You know what I mean? Whether you were talking about like work and what have you, it was just like you see it on TV in the movies, sat in this old school diner. And just listen to two friends sort of yapping about their service. It was absolutely fantastic. And hello to Ron. I did very much enjoy that breakfast. He was still on watching the podcast, just put a record. Yeah, it was amazing. So you mentioned there, obviously, 9/11. Something else that you experienced when you were in Biloxi, I know that we spoke about it, was you were there when Hurricane Katrina hit that coast as well, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I remember it because my girlfriend at the time, she worked for one of the one of the TV stations there. And normally I would have been allowed to go there for the hurricane. They have a generator, they have all this stuff. But I guess the hurricane got so big that they didn't want to be responsible for me dying, you know? Yeah. So like the last day they were like, well, Bo can't come here. And she was like, well, then I'm not going. We have to go somewhere. So we ended up calling a friend of ours that probably just lived 5 miles off the coast. And we ended up at his house. And I literally stood outside of his house and because the wind was coming from the side and would watch the grass lay over. And it was perfectly horizontal with the ground. And the roof ended up getting ripped off. We had to leave halfway through the hurricane. We had to leave because there was no roof left on the house. And then the apartment I was in had 6 feet of water in it. So the only stuff that I got to keep was the stuff that was really upstairs. But everything on the bottom level was gone. So, it was. But I feel like we made it out okay. I had my dog and I had my guitar. So
that's it.
I feel like I did pretty good.
Yeah, man. Well, I suppose you made it out. That's the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what was that like experiencing that? Seeing those, I can't even begin to imagine it.
No.
So every person has a survival mode, right? And you get into it. And by then I was already hearing about all these deaths and, you know, all this stuff happening and whatever. And so all the stuff that was lost was really not meaning much to me. I didn't care if a family Bible was like, none of that stuff mattered, right? It was just stuff. And when you hit survival mode, sometimes you can have this feeling about yourself that nothing else matters. And you kind of hyper-focus on just kind of making it, you know? Yeah. So it can be very rough. At the time, believe it or not, I was delivering water for a water company. And my truck had been loaded down with water. And once they called us back to work, they said, hey, go out and sell all this water. And how am I going to sell water to thirsty people? Right.
Yeah.
So I gave it away. I was giving my water away to everybody. I came back and my boss said, hey, you know, you did a good job. You sold everything. I said, no, I didn't sell anything. I said, I gave it away. He says, you can't do that. I said, well, sure I can. Just look at the truck. It's empty. So I didn't have that job very long. So, yeah. Now, he told me the next day, he says, I'm loading your truck back up and I need you to sell all this water or you'll be fired. So I gave it all away and handed in the keys.
Oh, top man. Brilliant. Top man. Oh, man. See, like you say, you experienced that, but we've spoken to our friends like Tilly and Shana. Obviously, they're based in Oklahoma, which, you know, they get their fair share of hurricanes there too. And I think when you experience it a lot, those guys can get pretty blasé about it. Like, there's an old saying in Oklahoma is basically you only go inside once it's blowing the red cup out of your hand. You know what I mean?
Right.
I can't imagine getting that used to something that as devastating as that.
It was, they
have tornadoes. We on the coast, we had hurricanes, but I always said that I'd rather have a hurricane because you usually know several days out, tornadoes pop up in the middle of the night. You just, you know, you wake up and next thing you know, everything's gone. Yeah, it was once in a generation for me, a hurricane. I mean, it's, you know, there were casinos that were lifted up over telephone poles and dropped on top of buildings. It's, you know, to be able to see that, it was amazing. To the force of nature is just incredible, you know. So I don't miss living down there and worrying about hurricanes like that. And, you know, we're far enough away that a hurricane can come through here, but we're not going to get the water like that. We'll get the rain and the wind and stuff like that, but we won't, you know, none of the stuff from the water.
Yeah. You see, I mean, obviously, we don't get them here, and we're sort of relatively lucky in terms of geographically, you know, where the UK is. We're not on any major fault lines, you know. We don't really get hurricanes, you know, a sort of 30 mile an hour wind, 40 mile an hour wind, and every now and then you'll get a storm come through. But compared to the storms that you see, you know, in the US, it's nothing really. But I'm trying to imagine, like, seeing houses and cars literally just picked up and blown around, because I just can't fathom it.
No.
And as you said, Bo, the, you know, nature is a terrifying thing, and you know, you whether it's sort of tidal waves or tsunamis or hurricanes or whatever it is, or earthquakes, you know, I mean, was it earlier today? There's been like volcanic eruptions in Finland or Iceland or whatever it is again. You know, and you just think, to be there and witness that and see the actual like power of nature would be frightening, but in a way, like a bit awesome at the same time. And it's frightening when you're in there, but then when you reflect, you're like, wow, like, yeah, we got through it. Yeah, everybody was okay. But like, what an experience. Because I can't imagine the wind whipping up and then you get like almost like the eye of the storm and then it's just perfectly calm for a period of time, and that must be really surreal, because you've seen what's gone and you know what's coming, but for that, in the eye of the storm, it's just perfectly calm, and it must be such a surreal feeling, or probably dread, because you think, shit, because like, it's coming from the other side as well now, do you know what I mean? But just the sheer power of it, I suppose, and it makes you just feel a bit insignificant, doesn't it? You know, it's like the power of nature, you're just like, you know what, if it wants to do it, you crack on, because you ain't going to stop it.
That's right, you know. But let me remind you, though, Gaz, when I landed there, our pilot landed between 100 mile an hour gusts of winds. when I went there to England,
Wow,
you guys were having that storm.
Yeah,
it was like a hurricane. It was just blowing everything. We didn't know if we were gonna be able to make it, but my brother told me that he could see, you know, the airplane like on the radar or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And the pilot literally landed between gusts of wind of like 70 or 80 miles an hour.
Wow.
But
you know, and you will get them, but we just don't get some hurricanes, tornadoes or such. You'll get like, you'll get a storm and stuff, but you don't get much of the storm surge, and where we are inland,
shit weather.
Oh yeah, we get shit weather. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we get shit weather all the time. Yeah, but I suppose we're quite lucky in terms of A, where the UK is, but then B, where we are in the UK. Yeah. You know, we're not coastal. As I say, we don't get battered by storm surge or tidal surges or anything like that.
Right.
You know,
so. Yeah. Speaking of weather, though, Gaz, did you notice that Adam had a suntan when he came back from here? Was he a little bit darker than everybody else?
A little bit, yeah.
I, That's not really easy anyway. So yeah.
But you're using that SPF 100 to make sure you weren't going to get sunburned.
Yeah, I probably didn't use it as often as I should have done.
Well, you didn't get sunburned, so that's good.
I didn't get sunburned. No, I was a little bit. I know when we went to SeaWorld, I had it on then because my God, that was hot. That was hot. Like, we were walking around that place, and I think we lasted till about, we were going to go for the whole day, and we lasted till about 2 o'clock because it was just, we couldn't walk around in that heat. For too much
could not wait to get splashed by those orcas.
Until we did, and the water stuck.
and the other thing is, and it's sort of weird because you go to sort of SeaWorld or whatever, and you don't really make the connection between. You're absolutely baking hot. Yet when that water splashes you, it's damn cold. It is damn cold. And you never really make that connection until you get splashed. And you think, shit, that's cold.
Yeah. Well, we were waiting outside, weren't we, to go in. And then we stood in that heat. And we were in the cover. And Matilda's moaning her bag off. And then we got inside. And then we were sat there. We made it straight for that splash. So we weren't messing around. And we filmed it, obviously, that first class. And the scream that came out of JJ. He got soaked. He did not appreciate that.
No, but I'll tell you, he did really well. He took kind of everything in stride, He was just like, I could see how he's going to be as an adult. It's just going to be like, hey, I'll handle it if it comes to me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's the kind of kid he is.
He loved Texas. He loved Texas. We've been to a couple of places on holiday, and he was very much a home there. He made Texas his second home. Nice. Yeah, he loved it. It was nice. Yeah, it was cool. Until he's just a whirlwind anyway, so you know what I mean? You never...
just wind her up and let her go.
Absolutely. So, like I say, I was there for my 50th. You've got your 50th coming up, dude. I'd like to hear some of your birthdays from the past. Any that are memorable? Any gifts that you remember getting maybe from your time in Mississippi as a young lad?
Yeah. So, my parents did a pretty good job, even when they were divorced. My dad, I think I have a picture somewhere of my dad holding up a cake and it says, happy 16th birthday or whatever. But growing up as a kid in Mississippi, we were allowed to drive at 14.
Right.
And we have a driver's license at 15. So on my 15th birthday, I already been to driver's ed and everything. My dad bought me a truck. He bought me a little Toyota SR5, little stick shift. And I drove that everywhere. And I was like, man, I don't have pictures of this thing. Well, when I go back to my yearbook, they took a picture of the band or the football team or whatever. And in the background was my lone little truck in the background. So nice. I could always go back and see that. So that's one of my most memorable when he goes, here's your truck. Taught me how to drive a stick shift. And, that was very memorable for me because I took that truck everywhere. I mean, I went everywhere. I can't tell you though. And I don't even know how it stayed together. Because, as kids, you just don't drive around. You do dumb shit, I was trying to get as much air as I could over the railroad tracks. And somehow that truck stayed together, So God bless it. It did a good job. I kind of wish I could get in and drive it a couple more times now.
But, I bet. Yeah, there's something special about your first car, isn't there?
Yeah, mine got written off, sort of thing.
So did mine.
So yeah, not for me. I just skidded on some ice, and there was a bit of a bad bend, but it's just really sheet ice, and I spun off, and there was a car in front of me that had just spun off, and they were changing a tire, changing a wheel, and then there was as I was half getting out of my car, I just heard like a. Sort of turn around, there's another car skidding off and hitting the back of my car and basically just wrote the whole thing off. And there was a car on the other side of the road that had spun off. And so people had phoned the police and funny sort of stuff. I say funny story. So the police car arrived and there was about four or five cars at various points along this sort of bend. And the policeman sort of got out of the car and then basically slipped over. It was like a really comical moment in like absolute mayhem. So then you literally this police sort of gets out and literally like end up to horse over tits sort of thing, and it gets wow, it is slippy. It's like, you know, you've got like five cars in the space like 40 yards of it. You know what I mean? It's, and actually, there was a lad, and you talk about like young people doing dumb shit. One of the people that had sort of spun off had gone a bit further down the road and like telling people just to slow down. It's like slow down sort of thing. It's really dangerous. And this old Capri, so it's like a youngish lad, and the Capri back in the day was like a sort of sporty car, and everybody loved it. And basically, it came around, the car's like just fishtailing like this, and you can see this lad going, oh shit, sort of thing. And how he didn't crash, I mean, literally, this car go woo, 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 all the way down, he's like, shit in hell. Everybody's like this, like, oh my God, he's going to crash. And he didn't. And how he didn't, I've got no clue whatsoever, but somebody must have been upstairs looking down at him at that point. But yeah, that was my first car. It was a mustard yellow Triumph Dolomite. It was.
You need to Google that car, because I tell you, it's a classic. It's
absolutely. Classic. And it got like mahogany dash, and I love that car. It's quite quick as well. But as you say, though, you know, you do dumb shit in it and stuff.
Yeah.
I've had some shit cars as well. Yeah, they haven't all been good cars. Yeah, I've had some shit ones. Yeah.
My first car was a Volkswagen Polo, funnily enough, which I wrote off, and I have nobody to blame other than myself, because I was the idiot who went into the back of a car. that's it, though, yeah. But you Americans, especially in the South, there, you love your trucks, don't you? And this is one thing I saw in Texas. Every other car, I know, but actually, that's ridiculous. More than every other car was a truck. Insane. They were everywhere. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure you got the full experience. So we wanted to pick you up in my truck, and you know, you could put easily five people in there, you know, three, you could put six in there if you needed to, but you know, it's not necessarily a big truck for Texas, but I knew Beans was going to be, and he'd always said, he goes, look how much room it did in it, you know, cause it does have a step that you have to step up into it. But it's not really big for Texas, I don't think.
No, we did see bigger, but it was a big truck. I don't know what if a lie, dude. I'm 6'5". I could stretch my feet out, and they didn't touch. I could stretch my legs out. No problem. I've never had that in any other car I've been in.
It's weird, because a couple of times that we sort of holidayed in the States and stuff, you go over there, and like you mentioned earlier, like everything just seems bigger, and it's bigger in Texas, but it's bigger in America, and there didn't seem as though there were any small cars. There's just no small cars. Like over here, you'll get small cars and people like little runarounds and stuff. Over there, everything is just a big car. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine, as Bo saying, you know, you go out into sort of into Texas and you see people with big trucks and shit, that's like, that's massive. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've got a picture of our kids stood in front of Bo and Matilda's favorite store, Tractor Supply. And they're stood in front of this truck, Matilda and JJ, and I'm telling you now, they barely come up halfway past the wheel.
It really?
Well, you also have to understand that, you know, my truck isn't a working truck like a lot of these people in Texas.
Yeah.
They're pulling cattle. They're pulling, heavy. So those trucks have got to be big. They got to be able to pull all this without, you know, the engine running down or anything like that. So, yeah, some of those trucks that they have out here, those F-350s or, what you know, what the duallys, they're doing it for work. You know, they're $100,000 trucks, but it's their job to do that too.
Yeah.
And they are amazing. They're beautiful vehicles. They really are. And speaking of things being bigger than that as well, dude. So one, like you say, what you have planned for your birthday and what I had while I was out there was literally on the biggest barbecue I've ever seen in my life. I mean, how big is that barbecue, dude?
It's I don't know the dimensions, but it is big. It's, I think it was 250-gallon propane tanks.
Wow. That was,
one on each side. So, my stepson built it, and he built the trailer for it and everything. And he, it is big. It's very big. And it's insulated, so you don't have to use a lot of wood. I mean, if he was to sell that thing, I bet you'd get $40,000 for it.
Yeah. It's big. You tow it on the back of a truck.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to tow it. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, I can't believe you're going to be firing that up and we'll be missing out on that one.
Well, it's. I love doing my own barbecue. I love making my own ribs and all that kind of stuff. But he does a great job, and his pit is amazing. And, you know, sometimes it's good not to have to cook and just kind of sit back. I think for my birthday, instead of firing that up, I think – my wife's going to make some enchiladas. So we're going to make enchiladas and do that kind of thing. So I told her, I said, like, you know, we don't have to do barbecue every single time. So we could do some enchiladas. But, you know, the one thing we have to bring back is the banana pudding. It's coming.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Dude, honestly, I can't even, I'm salivating just thinking about it. I love my desserts. I like, I love my desserts. And oh my days, that is the best pudding I have had in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Well, banana.
You do like bananas, you're right.
Yeah, man. Honestly, it was amazing. Absolutely. Oh, I'm thinking about that.
You're getting sidetracked. You're like,
get a little tear in your eye.
I could have eaten the whole thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. I did eat the whole thing before. I ate every bit of it. When I first met her, she made me banana pudding, and I was like, oh, it's, you know, okay, banana pudding. I took a few bites, and I was like, oh, my God, this is so good. And she sent it home with me, and I had a roommate at the time, and I told my roommate, I said, hey, there's some banana pudding in here. And he was like, I don't know. 2 o'clock in the morning, I feel like I needed to have banana pudding.
No, so
I got up and went to the refrigerator, and he was already there with a spoon.
Brilliant. I
said, get me a spoon, brother.
I tell you what, my enduring memory of the trip to the States as well is probably the most American thing I've ever seen, or probably the most Southern State of America thing I've ever seen, was when you were lighting the barbecue, you and Kyla, with basically you had this, like, you know, like the weed burners, whatever,
yeah,
with a knife and what have you, prizing out the safety valve so they can make the flamethrower out of it. It's just like, if you were to take that picture, say, where are you? Yeah, you're in one of the Southern States. There's no two ways about it.
That's true. Yeah, that safety valve was keeping it from lighting properly. So we just popped it out and turned it on, and oh yeah, it's a blowtorch. Yeah, it was a flamethrower.
It was lethal. It was amazing.
Yeah,
just. On that side of it, not that side of it.
Oh, that's
100%.
Right.
100%. So like, tell us a little bit more about your time back in Nettleton as well, because here, you know, there before the grace of God, you never know, I could have been growing up there myself.
Yeah, yeah. So I spent my summers up there. That's where Leonard had his house and our grandfather. And so we spent a lot of summers up there. My cousin lived right next door, a lot of acreage, you know, different from how I grew up on the coast. You know, the coast of Mississippi, the three counties on the coast are completely different than the rest of Mississippi, really. And as far up north in Nettleton, it was very country. There, what you did during the day was what you would think about kids in the 80s would be doing. Riding bikes, making ramps, fishing, you know, being outside. I did a lot of that too on the coast, but it was a little bit different. But, you know, I thought about, if you're growing up in the UK or growing up in the United States, what would be the differences? And I think back then there was probably a lot that were similar because we stayed outside a lot. And I know you guys did too. You walked everywhere, right? You still walk everywhere. We rode our bikes or walked everywhere we went. We would play in the woods. We'd do all this stuff, but I think that's changed now. Kids these days don't do that.
No, not at all.
Here. But they may over there, I'm not sure. But over here, they don't. They don't play outside like they used to.
No, as much.
And it's a shame because, I remember growing up and doing the same things that you've just said about, you know, you'd go into the woods and you'd, in your holidays or at the weekend, and you'd get out of the house at 9:30 in the morning and you'd go back home at 5:30 or 6:00 or whatever in the evening. Oh, by the way, you know, tea or dinner or whatever is served at 6:00. And if you miss it, tough shit, you'll go hungry. You know, there's none of this like phone, you know, we'll phone you when it's ready. It literally is like, there you go. And then you eat your tea, you go back out. And basically, you know, my curfew is when the street lights come on, you've got to get home. And that was it. That was the time that you set your life by, and you'd be playing football outside or soccer, as you say, you know, and the street light comes on and you're like, oh, I should be going now. But that street light's ace. So just another 5 or 10 minutes or so. And then like you'd end up walking back home and you got all right, still pasting from your mum and dad because you're like 10, 15 minutes later than you said you were. It's like, I'm really sorry. But there's no phone. There were no phones. And it's such a shame these days that you see the kids and they're just stuck in front of screens, and it's it's such a shame that they just don't seem as though they play out anymore.
No.
Such a shame. And like, growing up, you know, you've got really good mates and really tight. And you know, mm-hmm. I grew up, there was sort of five or six lads. There was me and my younger brother, a couple of years younger than me. And we got two friends, and the elder brother was in the year below me and so on. And then there's sort of three or four others, and we were really tight. And, you know, there's like six or seven lads, and we basically went everywhere together. And we sort of brought each other up almost, you know, because literally spent that much time with them. You literally sort of, they were your boys. I didn't have one brother back then. I had like five or six brothers, you know, and you'd spend every waking moment with them. And you couldn't phone them and say, so what you do is you get on your bike, as you said, but you'd bike to their house for 5 minutes, knock on the door, is Bobby in or whatever? Oh, no, he's out. Oh, okay. And then you bike home. There was no ringing. It was just, you know, you'd just bike to and from. It's such good times. Such good times.
Yeah.
Or you would just drive around the neighborhood until you saw where all the bikes were, and you go, oh, there's where everybody is.
Yeah, that's where,
you know. So,
absolutely.
It was a hell of a time to grow up. It really was. It was a hell of a time to grow up. I appreciate me being a Gen Xer. I appreciate the way we were raised. No one had to hold our hand to do anything. We pretty much were out on our own, and nobody really worried about where we were.
No,
they just, you know, they just didn't. They just somehow, some way, we made it back, you know, from whatever we were doing. And, you know, they really didn't ask what the hell we were doing either.
I think, you know what, Bo, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think, you know, they knew you were safe. They knew that you were not on your own, because you'd have your mates with you, and you know there'd be five or six of you. You know, you'd never go anywhere on your own. And if something did happen, they knew that one of those five or six would make it back home and tell them. And you know, and you got home, you had a good day. So yeah, all right. And that was it. You know, they just knew that you'd had a really, really, really good day.
Yeah.
And that was like almost, you know, stop, rewind, play, and you do that day after day after day, and you go to the woods, and then somebody go, oh, there's a different copse of woods up there, and you could do den building, or you do dam making over the streams and stuff, and then you'd rope swings and all of that sort of stuff. Just amazing times.
Yeah, they were. God, we sound like three old men, don't we? Getting a bit nostalgic about this.
I know. Well,
it's sad. It's sad to see it go. But the only constant has changed. Nothing was the same in the 1980s as it was in the 2000s, or, you know, in the 2020s or whatever. It's not going to be that way. So, you know, what we call nostalgic, other, you know, kids, you know, just think it's, why don't you just call them? Why don't you? They don't understand it.
No. But,
you know, as we get older, it's they're gonna understand less and less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to understand less and less about what they do.
Oh, cool. Yeah, absolutely.
It's already happening now, you know. Oh, yeah. We talk all the time about, you know, how do you manage, as a manager, how do you manage kids that are in their 20s and 30s? Yeah. Because what worked in the past doesn't necessarily work all the time now, you know.
No. I think the key to that kind of thing is as always, is understanding where they're coming from, understanding what makes them tick. But like you say, the older you get, the more distance you are away from understanding that. And what we were like in our 20s, God help us. Sometimes I look at people in their 20s and just think, dude, you need to get yourself into some trouble. That's what we used to do. It was fun. Get yourself out drinking. just see where life takes you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like life's making memories, and life's for making adventures, and you know what, and some of the adventures are good and some of the adventures aren't so good, but you know, you bloody learn from them. You know, you probably learn more from the ones that weren't so good than you do the ones that were good.
Yeah, life lessons, dude. Life lessons are important to learn, you know, and learning them the hard way makes you remember them a little bit better.
That's right.
I remember, this is going to sound cringy now, but I had a shirt back there, like a really shit shirt sort of thing, but it had a quote on it. And it says, live life with no boundaries, explore and invent as you go, because survival is an art. And it was something that just stuck with me, because it's like, you've got to do that as an individual, as a nation, as a race. You have to explore, you have to invent, you have, because actually we are on it. You have to survive, you have to go through it. And it's just stuck with me. Mm. And it was a shit shirt and it was a shit quote, but it just stuck with me. And it's like, actually, you know what? It's pretty bob on.
Yeah, next week we'll be on the podcast with a t-shirt that says "Live, Laugh, Love" on it.
Dream of the beer.
Dude, yeah, absolutely. So that was like that. That was the big difference. So whenever you came over to the UK, and you know, and we said, "Oh, we're going to go to the pub," it was like, you know what I mean. There was no getting in the car. That was very different, isn't it, from where you live, which is, you know, it's not a massively, well, Floresville is not a hugely populated place.
No,
but you know what I mean. Probably not that much more than Osage.
Yeah,
but you can't walk anywhere there, can you?
No, here, it's not. It's not built for that. Number one. Number two. In the summertime, you would be miserable just getting down the road. It's just not going to happen. But we did, my wife and I really, really liked being able to walk places. It's nice to be able to go out and just walk and see and talk and, you know, experience. So, you know, when I have friends talk about, you know, well, we went over to London and, you know, we did this and did that, they all are pretty envious because I got the culture of, you know, a small town, you know, like Alsager, you know, I got to see what they do every day.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what people really want to see at my age. They want to see what that's like. And I have family members over there. So it's, you know, hopping on a train, going, you know, straight wherever you wanted to go. That was amazing stuff to us. It's just because you don't get to do that. We're getting in the truck no matter where we go. Here.
Yeah,
you know, and you drive for 12 hours in Texas, you're still in Texas.
We've got a train for 3 hours.
See, that's mad. That is, it's that, and it shows you how big the States is. So, but it still blows my mind that, you know, when I've been to America, I've loved it. And you know, we do the typical touristy bit. So we, you know, you do Disney World and all that. You do your Florida bit, and then we did sort of New York and Vegas and San Fran. And so I've done a bit of America, not loads, but it blows my mind that there's people in America that absolutely want to come to the UK, and it's like, why would you want to do that? And but they do, and it's like, because the countryside, and as you said, Bo, it's just a completely different, I suppose, philosophy, completely different way of living, and I just don't get that. It seems weird to me.
Yeah, I think we take it for granted. You know, I feel, you know, I'd say with 50 years, and although I know you lived in Oxford for a spell, but we lived in the same town. That probably tells its own story about the place that we grew up in, that we're very fortunate to be living where we are. We're in the south of Cheshire. It's a very nice part of the country, you know, to live in. And, you know, maybe it is a little bit more expensive than some places, definitely, but it's not as expensive as some other places that are very nearby. So I think we were very fortunate, you know. And like I said, in life itself, when you think about it, when you take it back to when you were born, I don't really understand it. You know, people have their philosophies on life, but you know, I could have maybe been born out there in Texas. I feel very fortunate, you know, to have the life that we have. Yeah, definitely.
And look, you know, you get dealt a hand, and what you do is you try to make the best of the hand that you've been dealt with. You know, and I feel incredibly fortunate. You know, I don't regret anything really, that, you know, so certainly, you know, my mum and dad sort of raising me as such, you know. And people go, oh, but did you do that? Yeah, but that made me who I am now. That all of those experiences, all of those memories, that just, and you just build on that, and all you hope that you can do then is then pass that on to your own kids, and that you know, they then grow up to be the people that you want them to be, and then they do the same for theirs, and so on and so on and so on, you know. So I feel incredibly fortunate to have had the experiences in the life that I have so far, you know, plenty more memories hopefully to come, you know, and then grandkids and this and that, you know, you're thinking, yeah, can't wait for the next chapter sort of thing.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. So, yeah, so the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, dude, when are you going to be next making a trip over here to the UK?
We have a wedding going on this year, so we're planning for that for Kyler. Kyler's getting married in September. We're gonna get him married, and then we're planning. I want to get over there. I want to get over there and do something like I would love to do a train tour to different countries. This is my fantasy.
Yeah.
You guys need to put it together, okay?
Oh yeah, yeah.
We get on a train. We go to like France, right?
Yeah.
Find a pub. Go in there. Do a 30-minute podcast outside the pub, right? then go to another place, another, get on a train, go somewhere else, do that same thing, go to a pub, we're going to go, and then we'll sit outside and we'll talk about that pub and about what we liked about it, and do that to like four or five different stops, you know, and that, I mean, and it doesn't need to be an hour long. We could talk for 20 minutes, but then you put it all together and we say, okay, this was here, this was here, this was here, this was Scotland, this was here. And then, you know, you put it all together and make it an hour long, hour and 15 minute long podcast. And it's just basically, you know, the world train tour, you know, pub podcast, you know, and you just, you know, but, you just do it.
And, you know, you, Adam's probably told you this, you know, the whole premise in a way of Tourboy Radio was pretty much just what you've said there. It was, you know, and I suppose the idea was born from a trip to London where we went down and, you know, we were watching one of the NFL games down in London. And it was, you know, if you followed us down to London and you put a microphone on the table in a pub in London, what would, at the time, two guys, but obviously Andy joined us, you know, what would those three guys be talking about? And almost that was the premise of the podcast, wasn't it? So, you know, you've just hit the nail on the head there, Bo. It's like, that's exactly what we should be doing. And I can't wait for it to happen.
That's exactly what we will be doing. Yeah, we will do that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I like the idea of, like, you know, an Allstate is nice, and we'll spend some time in Allstate, definitely, in the next cup. But yeah, we'll head to France or somewhere like that. Maybe go to Paris.
But one of the guys that we had on a couple of weeks ago was that they're trying to visit every pub in the country or that. So that, and what did he say? There's like 40,000 of them or something. I can't remember the number he said.
60,000.
60,000 of them. Yeah. And we said, how many are on now? And he's like 2,500 or 3,000 or something like that. But he literally does that. Like every Thursday, every Friday, he jumps on a train and he goes to a little town. And he'll go, right, I'm going to go into a pub and I'm going to spend a beer. I'll have a beer in that one. And then I'm going to go to that pub and have a beer in that one. And that's all he does. That's what he does.
50 pubs a weekend.
Yeah, 50 pubs in a weekend. Yeah. So, yeah. How's your liver, by the way?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever he's doing, I need to find out what that is. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
I can't imagine he's doing his liver any good.
Well, we're past that.
Yeah, we're past worrying.
Yeah, we're past the tipping point now. You know, tipping point way years ago.
We will have to do that, dude. We will have to do that. I love France. I love France. And when I took my kids there, they, you know, we went to France last year, and they absolutely loved it. They absolutely loved it. So yeah, any excuse to go back there.
Yeah, no, well,
I need an excuse to go back to Scotland. You know, since I found out I'm 30% Scottish.
Yeah,
so I got to get back to the homeland.
Yes, get back to the roots. go again.
Well, that was an interesting experience, wasn't it, doing that DNA test? Because I found out, like, you know, you're as English as I am.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for John, for your brother, I guess that's good, because he, you know, he loves English, you know. But for me, just to know that I had, you know, I'm as much Polish as I am Scottish, which was absolutely crazy for me to even think about, but I really love Scotland. I'll tell you, it's not the best when you're in one of those areas that has like a lot of tourists, right? It's not the best for that. But I really loved, I just love the atmosphere. Yeah. There's a lot going on. I mean, it was like I was in, like, my mind was back 300 years, 400 years. In my mind, everything was just, I was like, I can't believe, you know, that I'm walking on these streets and they haven't changed, and, you know, all this time, and looking out a window of a castle-y castle, you know, making sure, you know, for somebody who's never seen that kind of stuff, it was really pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Edinburgh is one of my favorite cities, because, like you say, there is that much history. So we went, it snowed while we were there as well. Oh. So it was cold. It was very, very cold. And we probably had COVID, to be honest with you.
I don't know what that was, but I'm going to tell you right now, I haven't felt that bad in a long time. And I'll tell you, I haven't had COVID since then. So
no.
I don't know how I got on the airplane, because they checked my temperature. I know I was 106. I was not feeling it. And whatever we caught, it probably originated from that orb that was downstairs.
Yeah, that you
caught on your phone. Yeah.
That one. Yeah. So we went into the catacombs. We went under there, and I did a little bit of filming. I didn't notice it till afterwards, but yeah, there was like this light source floating around that, you know, normally you would expect it when you move the camera to be a reflection off the lens. But yeah, it was bizarre. But yeah, Edinburgh is fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic city. And like you say, that train journey up and you see the beautiful Scottish countryside on the way up there. Yeah, it's a fantastic part of the world. We will have to make it back there. I think next time you come over as well, one place we talked about taking you to was Chester. Because literally the walls around Chester were built by the Romans. So they've been there 2,000 years, maybe longer.
Wow. Yeah.
And literally, you know, Chester is a walled city. So you can literally walk all the way round, and it literally circular in it. And I don't know how long it takes, about an hour and a bit maybe to get round, sort of thing. But, you know, Chester's lovely. And again, there's different bits of history in Chester. There's the Romans, the fort and stuff. But then there's loads of sort of Tudor buildings, and you can just see the different time periods through the ages, sort of thing. And it is an incredible place. And there's a couple of nice sort of bars, and there's a couple of nice restaurants there, and this, that, and the other. But yeah, Chester, you've got to go. And it's a bit like York. You know, it's similar. You know, really historic place that if you're into your sort of history and stuff, and you want to, it is almost magical.
Yeah. I think you'd like either of those places, Bo. The history there is it's not similar to Edinburgh in any way, but the historical nature of it is.
I suppose at York, is it the Shambles? Is that what it is in York, which is a sort of famous street, a very, very old street, and it's very famous for bars and taverns, and loads of people go there, and it's like you go and have a drink on the Shambles, York is amazing. York actually is a place is very, very good.
So one of the places, dude, that you used to visit a lot, I don't think you've been to in a while, New Orleans, however it's pronounced, NOLA. Yeah, tell us about those trips there, dude, because that's one place I'd love to visit.
It is still one of my favorite places to go, and mainly because of the food now. You just don't get that food anywhere else. And from Biloxi, it's 45 minutes away. So, you know, I almost felt like that New Orleans was a home, you know, or a place that I can get to, you know. We tried to make a trip a year at least to go out there. It's about a 9-hour car ride. And so it's not that bad. We just drive over there, stay a couple days, go to Biloxi, you know, or go to Biloxi first, stay a couple days, and then stay a night in New Orleans on the way back. You know, other than it being very touristy, you can get off the strip, off Bourbon Street, and go to these places that, like, a lot of the locals go to. Yeah. That's where I like to hang out. There's a couple bars that I used to hang out in that were off the strip, and you just get good food. And, you know, people down there, they're just, it's a different atmosphere. They're just very laid back. Because it's got the French vibe, but it's an uptick. It's like, you know, you're really kind of up. You know, I've never been to France or anything like that, but this has got, you know, everything is just kind of Creole and just kind of laid back. Even their funerals are not a sad time. They have parties for their funerals down there, you know, like real parties. So it's a different type of atmosphere. And I tell people, you know, if you get a chance to go to New Orleans, eat their food, try, you know, everything. Hell, I tried haggis and I actually liked it. So, you know, go down there and eat some seafood, you know, that came out of the Gulf that morning. You'll really enjoy it.
I'd love to go. It just looks special, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it's one of those places that the jazz and that, as you said, Bo, that just that vibe, that sort of quite laid back sort of deep South vibe sort of thing. I mean, obviously, is it the Mardi Gras? Is that New Orleans? Well, I mean, have you ever experienced that, Bo, at all?
Oh, yeah. So when I was a police officer in Biloxi, I wasn't a Biloxi police officer. I was in Passe Christiane. But we used to help everybody out with the Mardi Gras parades.
Right.
And I would have to work Mardi Gras parades, you know, over in the other counties and whatever else. Never worked them in New Orleans, but did work a lot in Mississippi. And they're pretty big in Mississippi, too. Matter of fact, the Passe Christiane parade had over 100,000 people coming to that parade. And the town only had 13,000 people in it. So it was one of the, bigger ones. I would never, I do not like people enough to go around a parade anymore. I once you've worked them, it really is about the seventh level of hell I could think about going to a parade with that many people. I would rather not.
Yes.
I will stay away, but I will go during the off season. I don't need to see people to have good food. I promise.
No.
Yeah, it makes sense. So do you not like, you know, so you've lived in a few different places. You've heard about a few different states there. Well, quite a few different states that you've visited. Texas is home now for you, yeah?
Forever. Yeah, this is it. Yeah. We built this house. We bought this land. I got to pick my neighbor. You know, this is everywhere I wanted to be my whole life. Yeah. And it's exactly everything I was looking for. There's I'm where I want to be. This is where I'm going to retire. This is it.
Yeah.
100%.
And that must be, in a way, like an amazing feeling to know that you are where you're supposed to be, and you found your lane, and you're just staying in that lane, and everything, and not mapped out in a bad way, but everything has sort of culminated in you being there. You buy the land, you build your house, and that's now your forever house, and you can't really, you've got no desire, and yes, you've got desire to travel and be elsewhere, but you've got no desire to base yourself anywhere else, and that, you know, that must be quite a comforting feeling, you know, a very contented feeling.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people, they chase something their whole life, right? Where do I want to go? What do I want to do when I retire? Well, I've answered a few of those questions already because I'm here.
Yeah.
So whether I'm working or not, I'm in the place I'm going to be at. So it is like that pressure kind of off of you of, you know, what am I going to, maybe I'll think about what am I going to do when I retire.
Yeah.
But I don't have to think about where I'm going to be. I'm exactly where I'm going to be. So if you want to find me, I'll send the address. You can come here anytime.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Like I say, you live next door to a good friend there, Kevin. I'm and very similar, really, to myself, actually, because Dominic next door is a really good guy.
I wonder who that could be.
No, I'm joking. No, it's funny, actually. It's interesting. Like, you know, when you know, Gaz and I, obviously, as we know, live next door to each other. Mm-hmm. But it's never planned that way, was it? You know what I mean? You guys sort of, you planned it. It was sheer coincidence. We ended up living next door to each other.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, me and Ad have been mates for probably too many years. We'd care to count, but to end up literally like my house is like there.
Right.
It's like 10 yards away, you know, and it's weird. It literally, we've been mates for ages, and then we moved into the estate, and then I don't know how long after it was, and I was like, oh yeah, we're moving on there. So, oh, where? And he told us, I was like, shit, dude, literally, we were like right there. We like wave out of the windows to each other, sort of thing. He's like, woo, sort of, and it's weird, but it's mint because we're now in the podcast, and it's like when the podcast, it's like I go out of Adam's house, and within 5 seconds, I'm at my gate, you know, and it's just, and it's weird because we're not, you know, we're not living out of each other's pockets, and we see each other obviously every week for the podcast and you sort of catch up and stuff, but just to know that he's like right there, he's like, you know, he's like my best mate is like 10 yards away from me, is pretty comforting, really.
It is. That's a good feeling. I mean, Kevin, he's next door, you know, when he retires, he'll be over there all the time. We, you know, we're doing this whole thing together, and
yes,
you know, as long as we're still breathing, we're going to be here and, you know, doing this thing. And, you know, we just built a pistol range over there. So now we don't have to go. Next time you come, we have a range right next door now. So we can shoot right over there. We don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. I guess that's one thing we haven't really touched on. That is one of the major differences between obviously the UK and the US is gun ownership there over there. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you were good enough to take me down to the range on your father-in-law's farm. And so I got to fire an assault rifle and a Glock. Was it a Glock?
You shot a Glock, you shot an MMP, you also shot an AR-15. Yep.
Yeah, it was
mad, dude.
Well, yeah, me with a gun is mad.
And again, you with a gun, I'm making sure I'm standing that side of you, not that side of you.
Very wise. Yeah. Oh man, I look forward to that now, dude. Yeah. God, just keep the kids away from me though.
Well, you know what? That side.
Kids, if you gotta teach them young in Texas.
Yeah.
You teach them young, and that way they're not scared of guns, and they know how to properly handle them. Yeah. What happens is when parents don't teach their kids the when they have a gun in the house and they don't teach their kids anything about it, that's when accidents happen.
Yeah. Because they get inquisitive, won't they? So they'll get inquisitive and go, oh, how does this work? And before you know it, something horrendous and horrific's happened. But if I suppose, like most things, if you go about educating them in the right way, then they understand the safety, they understand the implications of actually what happens if it does go wrong and the potential consequences and all of that. So, it's about that, how you educate them.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's a very famous video of my brother when we went to the gun range in Vegas that could have gone very, very wrong. Well, that's a story for another day. So we're just about around about the hour mark now. So first of all, I think, guys, we need to raise a glass. An empty one in this case. You drank quicker.
Drunk it all.
Yeah. And they go, oh, Bush Light. Oh, Johnny Simon will be proud of you there, dude.
Went back to my roots.
Fair play. Yeah, we need to wish you a happy birthday, dude. So, yeah, 50 years old, many, many, many happy returns, and hopefully have many, many, many. I sound like Lasada, police academy. many more happy birthdays to come. And also, we'll say hello to Kevin, and we'll raise a glass to Ron as well, because we know he's coming up to his wedding anniversary that we would love to be there for, but we can't, unfortunately. He was kind enough to send us out an invite regardless. So, yeah, thank you very much. And that's another party you got coming up in the very near future, isn't it?
Yeah, Star Wars Day, May 4th.
Yeah.
Nice. Yep.
Indeed.
Nice.
Indeed. So, guys, do you want to sum it up, dude?
Yeah, Bo, you know, 50 years young, not 50 years old. You know, you've plenty more left in the tank, I suspect, in terms of adventures. And I do hope, again, to catch up with you in person. You know, we had a hoot last time we were over here and we shared a beer or two or three or four. So, look, really, really, really looking forward to that again. And look, I've loved sort of just listening to the stories, listening to some of your stories from sort of, you know, back when you're younger and some of the experiences you've had. So I just want to say a massive thank you for sharing those with us and sharing those with our listeners. And I can't wait for the next time that we hook up.
Indeed. And although I have my cowboy hat on, dude, I was half expecting you to be wearing your Cheshire Police hat that we sent out to you.
Well, it's a yarmulke on me. Whoever it is, that's going to hold a special place for me. I'm going to build a shadow box for it. It's going in my office. That's something that I'll treasure. Like I didn't expect to get anything like that. That was pretty amazing. So, and I just want everybody to wish Ron a speedy recovery. He fell off the ladder yesterday. We're doing some work. The ladder no longer exists. He fell off. He didn't get hurt real bad, but I would think that he's probably got some bumps and bruises. He fell from about 12 feet.
Oh, wow.
And when he goes, oh, I looked over and he was touching nothing. He was just in the air.
Yeah.
Landed on that. But he jumped right up like a trooper. But I expect him to have some bumps and bruises when I see him tomorrow. So,
well, if that's the case, then Ron, I hope you're feeling okay, dude.
Get well soon, dude. Yeah. Anyways, let's not go my own experiences with gravity. Yeah, some of those stories next time we catch up. So, So, Bo, did you want to say your goodbyes to our listeners?
Well, I appreciate you having me on. When you asked me to come on about a month ago, and you said, you know, I said, what are we going to do? You said 50 years of Bo. You know, I thought, you know, how lucky I am to have somebody that would, you know, really just kind of spend an hour or so just, you know, talking really about my experiences and stuff like that. And I appreciate that more than you know. It's a humbling feeling to know that, you know, that you would take your time to, you know, just let me kind of talk about myself a little bit, because I don't do that very often. But I appreciate everything, guys. And, you know, 50 years young, like you said, you know, we'll try to keep it going.
Yeah, as we said, like when we celebrated ours, that was the first 50. We got the next 50 to come.
Absolutely.
And let's hope that is the case. But yeah, dude, no, honestly, you know, I can't be out there, unfortunately, and spending my, you know, your 50th with you, like, you know, and again, like, if you're grateful for this, you don't know how grateful I am that you put me up and gave me a home for 10 days in Texas, even though I told you it was originally going to be a week, and then
overstayed your welcome.
Yeah, I booked the flights on the wrong day.
Yeah, you know, we said we're leaving tomorrow. Yeah, that's not happening.
I booked the wrong day. Yeah,
it's another one of those ones that I had a beer when I booked the flight, and then I looked at, and I booked the holidays off work, and I'm looking at it and thinking, yeah, those days don't ring a bell. So I had to book an extra couple of days off work.
Nice.
Yeah, excellent planning. But no, honestly, dude, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. That genuinely is. It was an experience of a lifetime. My kids still talk about it. They still talk about Texas. We took them to Disneyland Paris earlier in the year, and they'll talk about Texas a lot more than they talk about the Big Mouse.
Yeah.
So that just leaves it to me to say thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you. You know, we've had plenty of views on this, so we really appreciate you taking your time to share and in Bo's experiences with us. And no doubt we'll have him on again at some point in the near future. And he's already trailed it here, so you know we're going to have to do it now. We'll be touring France. We'll be eating some snails and drinking some French beer and plenty of French. Don't you worry about that. And that's one for the future. Absolutely. So I'll wish you all a fond farewell.